From Sylvain Labs, welcome to Critical Nonsense. On our show, we dig deep into cultural ephemera and pose questions to each other to inspire interesting conversations. This is Critical Nonsense. This week, Ilana asks Joey a couple things about oversharing at work and selling out.
I'm not perfect, but this is what a Joey sounds like.
And this is what special guest Ilana sounds like.
Bondell. And this is what a boundary enforcer Jess Vander sounds like.
Hi, this is Jess.
Enforcing the boundaries.
Officer Boundaries. I'm Officer Jess Boundaries.
Ooh, Jess Boundaries is actually like a really good fictional pseudonym for you.
It's like a Mac. What's the guy from Parks and Rec?
We're going to edit out the long period of time where we're trying to think of his name. Burt Macklin.
Yes.
Got it. Real quick housekeeping. Tell your friends. Also, what is the address for the corrections department?
CriticalNonsense@SylvainLabs.com.
That's it. That's all the housekeeping. We cleaned up. We have a special structure this week because Ilana is better than us and just had a lot of great questions. So this is an all Ilana, all the time marathon. Are you ready?
I'm ready. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Yeah, we're ready.
Let's marathon.
So there's been a confluence of factors recently that have made
You're already off to a great start. Confluence of factors.
That have made me think about this concept of oversharing at work. And part of it is some personal stuff that I've been going through. Part of it is thinking about leadership and success at Sylvain Labs in the workplace and what that looks like. And part of it also, I guess, is just because I'm sitting with the known king of oversharing.
That's Joey.
That's Alex Contel.
Sound design.
And it's really just left me wondering about, you know, in a time where millennials want to bring their true self to work and erase the boundaries between work self and personal self and
that's
all of
said
that.
With implied air quotes.
Heavy implied air quotes. But something a feeling that I identify with, it really leaves me wondering how much I is TMI at work.
So as you... My answer would be the limit does not exist. No, I think it's such like a personal thing, but it also I think comes back to individual relationship. I don't know that there. I mean, I guess you could say that there is like a set boundary, and certainly we've established some arenas that are right. Like sex is off limits, right? Sexual harassment, we've like legally established a boundary in that particular arena. But I feel like people, when they have close individual relationships, still cross that boundary on a case-to-case basis.
Not the sexual harassment boundary.
No, not the sexual harassment boundary, but talking about things that might be considered a lot of I in the TMI discussion. And so for me, it feels like a question of like, the sort of understanding the boundaries on an individual basis, but I don't know if that is like if that is right or historically you have boundaries of professional decorum types of attitudes, like I'm sure at like MBA courses or things like that they have things that they talk about of like, these are things you can talk about and these are things you can't talk about. And it's like very rigid and firm, but I don't feel like that is true, especially in sort of what you're talking about of like a modern workplace now where millennials are a huge chunk of that population.
I think for the purpose of this discussion, I'm thinking a little bit less about those that you have personal, you know, friendships with that you're, you know, sidebarring with in the kitchen or whatever, but more about when is it okay for personal stuff to creep into work groups or work conversations? When is that boundary okay to cross? And I think it's interesting to start with thinking about what models are set for us. Mm-hmm. Because like you said, there isn't no formal decorum list in a modern workplace. But I think implicitly then we kind of look to our leaders for models of what is and isn't okay. And it's something that's been on my mind a lot. I think that, you know, self-reliance and strength and steadiness are qualities that almost objectively we often want to see in leaders. And especially I think for us, when our work can sometimes feel really uncertain and scopes are changing and there's, you know, unwieldy clients or whatever it may be, you sort of want to have that beacon of steadiness to turn to. But I wonder if that's going to be harder to uphold as this quote unquote newer generation ages into leadership, where they struggle to identify those boundaries. And so, for example, I have been told before to be cautious about even talking about being tired at work because you don't know what it means. You don't know how people are going to interpret what it means to be tired and what might be going on in your life and how they might kind of spiral with thinking about, I don't know. And so I think about that a lot. Someone said it to me kind of offhandedly, but I actually have thought about it in like the years since it happened. And I can't help but bring gender into this too.
Yeah, totally.
Because I think a lot about some of the, you know, amazing, I mean, obviously any new parent coming to work and functioning deserves a medal, but some of the amazing super moms that we have here who, you know, I'm working with until super late at night and, you know, through the video chat after the baby has been put to bed and you're going in the room and pumping and like on a call at the same time. And it's just wild to me. And I can't imagine aging into that and not wanting to talk about how hard it is because that feels human to me.
Yeah.
But I wonder if there's value in being reserved.
Yeah, no, I have a personal opinion about this. I don't know that it's sort of like a hard and fast rule or anything like that. But for me, the concept of stability and emotional volatility versus the concept of intimacy and sharing are quite different. I've had this idea for, in quotes, a book. I don't know that I'm ever going to write the book, but the idea of vulnerable leadership is something that's in my head because, you know, like you brought up not saying you're tired as like sort of potentially like one line that someone has told you of like a line you shouldn't cross of too much information in a workplace. Like, I feel like since I've had the baby, when people are like, how are you doing? My first response is tired, but good. Like, you know, like I basically feel tired all the time now. And I think I'm still functioning. I'm sure maybe there is like a minor decline in my effectiveness. But like that, it's the truth, right? Like for me, if I go in and put on a facade of just being like, I'm great. Everything's wonderful. I have superpowers. My day is going good. I'm super smart. I don't feel diminished at all. Like, it's just such a lie. And especially in like a collaborative work environment where you're expected to participate and produce something together, I think it's important to sort of express what your current, you know, like thinking of a sports team or whatever, like if a player is hurt, you know, the rest of the team can compensate for that player so they can get well and, you know, get back on the court or the field or whatever it is. And I feel like that's sort of the way that I think about like the professional environment of saying like, you know, you're going through a thing, right? We, you know, we've talked about this before at the company and Olen has brought it up of as soon as you get to a certain size, at some point, everyone at the, like one person at the company is always going through something, right? Like, and it changes hands and some, but you know, we're now 35, in the range of 35 to 40 people. Like, it's not unusual for one person to be going through something that's pretty heavy. But the benefit of having more people is that we can help compensate. And so I think in this case, the vulnerability allows for you to deal with your own stuff. Like that sort of rigid approach to not sharing, I think ultimately is like grounded in, I don't know if it's outdated, but like a very American conception of self-reliance. And I think self-reliance is important, but like, you know, no I in team, all of that type of stuff. Like it there's nothing wrong with leaning on the people around you to support you. And so I think that concept of self-reliance is sort of maybe where some of this block it off, like don't share, keep it to yourself, all of that comes in as well.
Yeah. I think honesty and candor builds bonds, and it can feel really alienating when you're, you know, physically or professionally close with people and you can sense that there's other stuff going on beneath the surface, but that they won't let out. And obviously to each their own, it's not like everyone should be going around airing their business. But I personally, you know, I think I might've said this on the last podcast, I can't remember, but I had like my Twitter handle in high school or whatever was Too Truthful a Mood. And so my personal brand is like, I always want to hear all the information.
Yeah.
But how would you define what the responsibility is as a team leader or a company leader or whatever is there a responsibility to uphold a certain sense of positivity or stability, which sometimes might mean not divulging the full picture of what's going on?
Yeah, I mean, I think that goes back to that like volatility question of, you know, when I'm in a situation that is tougher or maybe a little bit more unexpected or right, like there is sort of like a twist that comes into a project or whatever, I never try to pretend like it's not there. I try to put it in perspective and right, because like in a moment, like in your personal life as well as professional life, like you can hit something and it's hard to see perspective and you can kind of fall down the hole of blowing something out of proportion or not being able to see beyond it. And my personal approach is like, yeah, this thing is real, and if it sucks, it sucks. Like I, you know, not pretending like everything is wonderful, you know, like that sort of creates like this intense cognitive dissonance. If you're feeling, you know, bad or stressed or anxious or whatever it is, for me to be like, no, you shouldn't feel stressed or anxious. Everything is wonderful. I don't know why you feel that way. Like it makes you feel like you have to evaluate your own emotions, as opposed to saying like, maybe it's not as big, like you feel this way and there's merit in feeling that way, but maybe there's a different way to look at this challenge.
I wonder if the opposite, like some people might interpret that same exact thing in a super different way. Like what if you coming to work and having to be your very natural self is actually really scary for some people, or really exhausting, because you're like, right, you are constantly thinking about maybe that's too much. And is it, I imagine that for some people it's actually easiest to compartmentalize and be like, well, this is a safe like boundary I've set for myself, whether it's even something that my company or my culture has set. This is sort of the line that I've drawn so that I know that I'm not going to either present as too volatile or even have to just be constantly that in touch with myself so that people aren't like, what's wrong with you?
Yeah. That's a great point.
Yeah. I mean, I think like the question of being in touch is, the reality is like you are working with other people all the time. And in the same way that we talked last week about offense and managing individual relationships around offense, I think like this thing is the same. Like if I'm working on a team with you and you're not sort of attuned to your emotional intelligence or your own kind of, you're not self-aware of your own state, like, but I am working with you, like that can create its own tension points, right?
Yeah. And this also brings another point to me that is key to, you know, this conversation surrounding Sylvain Labs, because I also realize that something unique about our workplace is that we are friends and we all actually care about each other and care about each other's lives. And that makes our work better because we are collaborative and we're creative and all that stuff. But in other companies where genuinely you just aren't friends with certain people, or, you know, even in real life, you wouldn't want to divulge some of that information to, I can imagine there are other types of work settings where it would be, you know, like pulling teeth to make somebody actually share something with a person they would never otherwise share that information with.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about this before, but that the idea of intimacy, like from a psychological, or like if you're studying psychology and all that, the way that they talk about it is mutual self-disclosure, and it builds relationships. And I think within the work context, like, there's a way to think about it that feels maybe a little icky if you're thinking about individual relationships that way. But work improves the stronger the relationship you have with people. And you brought it up, Jess, and you know, like, if we're interviewing new people, I talk about this a lot. Like, I want to work in an environment where I feel comfortable to say stupid ideas as much as have good ideas. Like, if I'm actively filtering while I'm speaking, beyond, you know, like, obviously there are boundaries like we talked about, but if we're having a discussion about something, I'm like, well, I don't know if that's dumb, or I don't know how this person will receive it, or whatever, then I'm sort of reducing the effect that I can have in a collaborative team. And so I think, you know, creating an environment where people feel comfortable and safe enough that they're not going to be judged for bringing something to the table is really important, both on like an individual level, but also as like a company as a whole. So the value of having relationships at work is important. But I think something you brought up, Alana, at the beginning was sort of this millennial concept of what is the workplace, and that people want to live their truth in, again, air quotes, all the time. And the reality is, like, as a generation, we're working more than previous generations, number of hours, you know, number of days a week, doing additional side hustles and grinding and all of these other things. And so, you know, I'm spending more time with the people at the office than I'm spending with my wife. And I want to have like relationships that are meaningful in my life. And the reality is I'm spending so much time at my job. I need those relationships to be strong for me to feel like a healthy person, right? Like, to have a social support network. And so, you know, the things that I disclose with some people are different than with other people. But if I'm like just sort of trapping my, like, in quotes, private life from my professional life all the time, I feel like I'm sort of very boxed in and I can't actually be myself all the time. Like, I know you have to sort of modulate in different environments and with different individuals, but if you're modulating to like some straight line, you're kind of not allowing your internal environment to exist in the external world potentially.
Totally. I think that sometimes in my teams, I have kind of, feels like I've sort of taken the lead of just like going there and breaking that boundary. And I think for the most part, it always makes the relationships stronger. And I think until someone really feeds back and tells me otherwise, that's going to continue to be my point of view in the workplace. Because, and I would encourage, even if you don't work in a place like Sylvain Labs, where Jess said it feels like everyone is friends, I think sometimes you might be surprised how much people are wanting to receive these human feelings and moments, but they don't necessarily want to be the one to make the first move. But all it takes is opening up to then start sparking those bonds and that honesty, and it can change the whole relationship. It makes the work stronger because then you're not stressed about hiding things or burying things. And I think it can be really powerful.
There's, and I'll see if I can go back and find it, but it was like, you know, like sometimes you read something and it's not the crux of what you're reading, but it's like permanently imprinted in your skull. There was a study I was reading one time that was about how embarrassing yourself in front of other people dramatically promotes trust of those people. So if I say something stupid in front of you, or embarrassing, or like make a mistake or whatever it is, and I don't like completely shut down, you start to trust me more because I seem more human in front of you. And the reality is, like, I do embarrassing things all the time, like constantly just saying things that people are like, ugh, eye rolling at or whatever. I don't know whether that actually increases my trust in this environment. But right before we came in to record this in the kitchen, I said something like stupid and cringeworthy, and everyone was just like laughing at what an idiot I was.
Joey.
But ugh, again, but I think like it right, like relationships are about trust, and at the very least in a work environment, trust is something that you need to have with coworkers or whoever you're collaborating. Even if you don't, you know, like I don't know if I don't know what sort of is like driving your true like heart's desire or motivations, I can still know that I can like rely on you and trust you, and that what you say you'll do type of thing. So
also, I know we're almost up on time, but we can't finish this conversation without talking about poop. So we've been having a more kind of slightly abstract and serious conversation about sharing at work. But, you know, like I said before, Joey, king of oversharing, that can be vulnerability in an emotional bond building way. But it also means talking about poop and every other bodily fluid. I'm curious if that has ever backfired for you at work, or has anyone overshared with you in a way that surprised you and made you uncomfortable?
There's definitely an instance where someone overshared, not about themselves, about one of their friends, where I was like, oh no, now I know where my line is.
Is that when I showed you a picture of one of my friend's rashes?
No, that wasn't. That was not, that didn't cross the line.
This is not where I thought this was going. I was thinking like, oh, shared workplace, shared toilets. Like, you know what they did.
That
just left and like, you're just entering.
That too. I hate that.
Yeah. I think about that all the time when I go to the bathroom. Like, you know, when you go to the bathroom, you know you're going to walk in and maybe there's a malodorous smell or something like that.
Can I tell you something amazing?
If I see someone come out of the bathroom, if I know that that person was in there, I won't go in just because I don't want to, like, identify.
That's TMI right there.
Yeah, so I'll just be like, I'll just go to a different room just so I know that, like, in that case, if I go in and it's just like, oh, Jess was just in there and something bad happened.
See, now that's too far. That's Joey.
I was just going to say an amazing, you know, in like science when there's laws.
Yeah.
Like Newton has a few of those.
Yeah. I think that there's an amazing law that I've found where if you walk into one bathroom and you turn back around because it smells bad, you can go to the next one and it always smells okay.
Oh, that's a nice principle.
Yeah.
We should test this.
It's like opening the like which goat is behind which door versus like two goats, one car. And then instead you always should like change. You should always change your guess.
We can
two goats, one car is made me think of something entirely different.
No. Yeah, have you seen the movie 21?
No.
They explain this theory. Okay. Another time. That's enough. Thank you.
Well, poop. So we nailed it halfway through the marathon, the Alana marathon. We're at the halfway point. We just had a goo pack and
the crowds are cheering.
A water. We're chafing a little bit, but I think we're going to make it to the end. Let's do question two.
Feel like I might throw up. We're going to soldier through. So I was listening to Spotify recently and actually pretty, believe it or not, actually pretty uncharacteristically, I was listening to the like top hits of the day or whatever. And I started hearing this song by The Weeknd that was really moody. And then I heard Fire and then I heard Ice and I was like, what is this? And I looked at the album art. And I realized it was a song for the Game of Thrones soundtrack. And it was also with SZA and Travis Scott. And I just couldn't help but feel slightly disturbed about what like a moment of peak commercial opportunity seizing this felt like. And I was like, what do these artists have to do with Game of Thrones? And it just, it felt confusing and jarring. And then I realized there's a whole bunch of celebrities that were getting paid to work on the Game of Thrones soundtrack. And obviously, we've reached a whole age now of, you know, sponsored content, and it sometimes feels like, is there any celebrity that's above it anymore? And in thinking about all of the egregious examples that are out there, I couldn't help but wonder, what does it mean to sell out in 2019?
Yeah, this is a heavy one. You brought up one in the conversation before the podcast about, was it Chance the Rapper doing Doritos commercials?
Yeah.
Is it just like, hey, I'm Chance, I love Doritos?
He did something with the Backstreet Boys. I think it was during the Super Bowl for Doritos. And didn't he also do Kit Kats?
I don't know, but I was like, all right, Doritos, sure. You know, like everyone loves a good Dorito on occasion, but then you're like, he did something with the Backstreet Boys, and I was like, no, this will not stand. I want it that way.
Is it that the subject matter? Like, I wonder at what point does it become disturbing, egregious, or whatever the way you want to describe the feeling when you're like, ugh. Is it that SZA has no relationship in your mind to Game of Thrones, and it's like, I can't see a world in which these two beings end up together in the end of this really weird love story unless there's money involved?
Yeah. I mean, I think what you're getting at is really the crux of the question. I actually think the Game of Thrones example isn't even the best one, because Game of Thrones is enough of a cultural phenomenon that you can't really shit on someone. Like, maybe they are huge Game of Thrones fans, but there are other ones that just feel so much crazier. So I, as you guys may know, not sure if you follow the tabloids as closely as I do, but Nick Jonas and Priyanka Chopra had an extremely high profile wedding recently in India, and the press was breathlessly following it, and the entire wedding was sponsored, which is not, I think that goes all the way back to like Star Jones 15 years ago, but yeah, they really took it to the next level, which obviously social media enables you to do. And they were sponsored by Amazon, and was it Apple Watch? Like everything, every single post was sponsored, and this was their wedding.
Yeah,
you know?
That's strange.
And it's increasingly common. But even that doesn't, there's worse examples. So Millie Bobby Brown from Stranger Things recently did a sponsorship with Cisco.
What?
About workplace collaboration.
What?
And those are the ones that really have me wondering, yes, like, have you no respect?
Yeah. I want advice about workplace collaboration from a 14-year-old who has only like worked in like an acting sphere. That's so interesting.
Okay, but to Cisco's credit, like, she plays this like mind reading, like telepathic generous child. So in the sense that that's like magic. I mean,
You're reaching.
Wow.
I'm not saying that, like, I get it for Millie, right? I think that's part of the thing of these celebrities we see as people or influencers or whoever. We're like, you're a person. And if it's one thing if Chance the Rapper is just like really into Doritos, and it's another thing if you're like, okay, Millie, I know you don't have strong feelings about Cisco. What are you doing here? Or like, come on, Priyanka, you're better than this. You are the Glamazon of the universe, and Amazon doesn't need to be involved in your wedding.
I think like the question becomes, so like, there's a difference. There's some line here, right, between selling and selling out. Mm. Like, artists always are selling, right? Mm. The idea is that you're choosing art as your vocation, and unless you are like some ultra idealistic starving artist who like refuses to make money on your art at any point, like, the, you know, going all the way back to like Da Vinci and you know, like classic artists from the Renaissance or whatever, there was always someone who was patroning that art. Totally. So like, it was something that they were selling. The question becomes like, when does selling turn into selling out? And so in the Weeknd and SZA example, I'm like, yeah, if they like really like the show and they just get a chance to like, they're like, hey, can you make a dope song for us? And they're like, yeah, we like do dope things, so of course, like, we're gonna make that the song for you, like, that's fine. The question then, the line I think is sort of like, when are you willing to sell something that either conflicts with your values or just feels like,
right,
there is no artistic integrity in the thing that you're creating or working on. Mm-hmm. But it's purely a paycheck. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that's probably the line. And so if you're sort of entering an endeavor where you're like, I love this thing genuinely, or I'm getting to make my art and it's just sponsored by this thing. So like if Chance the Rapper like produced a music video for Doritos that was a commercial, then like that's kind of cool. Like he's getting a chance to like take Doritos money and make something, you know, get that Doritos money. That's like in a lot of rap songs, I think.
I think what you just
just
get that chatter.
Get that. Amazing.
Get that cooler rant. This is a bit cynical, but I guess I also am wondering, you know, for Game of Thrones, which is not, you know, it's mega popular, but I wouldn't say it's cool. And I can't help.
I don't know. That's an interesting question.
So it's not a particularly diverse show, and it's obviously not super contemporary in that it takes place in some unknown, you know, fantastical time. And I guess I wonder if they're trying to buy into the cultural capital that those artists offer and exploit it by aligning with them. Mm-hmm. And so maybe in the most optimistic version of this, The Weeknd and SZA are really big Game of Thrones fans and they really wanted to contribute to the final season. But I think in the worst case scenario, Game of Thrones marketing people are also wondering how they can be even more relevant in culture and appeal to a more diverse audience and borrow from those people's capital, which feels different. But I think the question you're getting at before is the big sort of cultural tension at play, which is it feels like, you know, as I love talking about, I think the face and landscape of celebrity has completely changed in the last decade or so. And I think in this sort of post-authenticity boom we were talking about before, we just kind of understand that celebrities are actually just people who need to make money, especially now all of the gradients of celebrity that exists. It's no longer, I almost think like A-list as it was before doesn't even exist anymore. And so where celebrities used to be these kind of rarefied, glossy other characters, now everyone, it's so much messier. And so in that sense, the world of SponCon, you know, we get it. We empathize that they just need to like make their paychecks too. But it feels in conflict with also the boom of like values as social currency. And so I think that line, that boundary is when they are so obviously conflicting.
Yeah. I mean, I think historically celebrities had the decency to do their SponCon abroad. I remember in like the late 90s, maybe there was like, I don't know, 2020 or Dateline or something. My mom was watching and it was talking about how like Brad Pitt and George Clooney and Julia Roberts and all of those like A-plus list celebrities from the late 90s were doing ads in Japan. They were, you know, making a ton of money of doing like, you know, schlocking like everyday products. I think in some cases it wasn't even, you know, like luxury goods. I'm sure in some cases it was, but they're just like, yeah, I'll just do it in Japan.
Yeah.
I still have a profile there and it's not weird for me to be in sponsored content. I'm getting my checks, but I'm not sort of diminishing my profile here in the US by debasing myself to the level of doing whatever Doritos commercials or, you know, like, like Life Alert commercials or whatever it is. But I think that reality, like that you're talking about of now, it doesn't necessarily feel like debasing, mm-hmm. but the question becomes, and you see this in Instagram when people are doing SponCon and they're like, you don't even like that product. Or, you know, like people are like, they have to sort of say, I genuinely like and use this product in a lot of cases, right? Because people are like clapping
now
back at them.
I don't even know to believe that. That feels like part of the SponCon script is to be like, guys, really, you know, I used it last night. It's amazing. And I think that there's a couple different tiers of this. And so agree that almost none of it, the fear around kind of deigning to do that, it's much blurrier now and doesn't exist the way it did before. I think something like, you know, the Game of Thrones example, or you know, the Kardashian family doing the giant Calvin Klein ad or something, that's kind of like, like, did you really need to do that? But it's fine. But then I think where it starts to change is when that it's a harsher values conflict, or it starts to feel dangerous or unethical. And so a huge topic in this arena has been about detox teas, which sounds silly, but it's absolutely massive on Instagram, and a lot of celebrities shill for fit tea, which is basically like a laxative tea. And Jameela Jamil, the actress from The Good Place, has almost, her acting work has almost been outshone by the fact that she has decided to be really vocal against this phenomenon and put the Kardashians and other celebrities on blast for, you are, you know, some of the wealthiest celebrities that we know.
Billionaires.
Of. Yeah. And you still feel a need to be hawking waist trainers and laxative teas. And she said something about, you know, like, I hope you feel good about the fact that your pockets are lined with the blood and diarrhea of teenage girls. And really trying
it's
to...
It's not funny, but it's I a know, funny line.
Trying to expose how damaging these things are. And that is when you're really like, okay, you know, 100%. One thing to be selling jeans, but it's another thing to be selling products that could actually be damaging to young fans who truly don't know any better.
Yeah, and that, like... In that case, like, it's especially egregious because we're reading articles all the time about how they're, you know, a family full of billionaires.
Right.
Poor Kendall and Chloe are just sitting on the sideline with only their 100 millionaires. They're not in that 3-comma club with with Kylie and Kim. But it's especially egregious in that case because it's just a demonstration that they're available to the highest bidder. Right. Like,
right.
I'll take checks from anywhere versus, you know, I think the soundtrack example, like, I have no problem with the soundtrack, like, where it's, you know, historically there are songs that have done far better over time than the movies. I'm thinking about Seal's Kiss from a Rose, which I believe was in the George Clooney. It was either in the Val Kilmer or George Clooney version of Batman.
Oh, really?
And neither of those are particularly loved at all, but that song has, like, lasted through time. Or Karen O from the Yeah Yeah Yeahs had done the soundtrack for one of the Twilight movies, which are, I'm unapologetic about saying that those movies are hot garbage. Like, they're just bad. If you like them, I still like you, but those are the worst movies ever. But, like, the soundtrack, she got together, like, all of these, you know, legitimate artists that were doing, that made new songs, new pieces of art for the soundtrack to the movie. And it was pretty well received. Like, I think, you know, it was a more artistic work than the movie itself that it was for. And so, like, if SZA and The Weeknd are actually putting the energy in to create a new song and you like it, like, I have no problem with, like, being paid to make your art. I think the other side where you're just sort of using your face to chill for anything is, like, that 100% feels like selling out, right? Like, that there's no, you're attaching no filter or value system to what you're willing to use your image to promote is, like, an entirely different thing.
Yeah, agreed. I think that's the line. Although I do acknowledge that it must.
That fit tea is really good. and we're getting our checks for this episode.
My tummy is flatter by the day.
Yikes.
But
don't go in the bathroom after Alana because of her fit tea.
I acknowledge that it must take an immense amount of self-control to turn down whatever it is, $20, $50, $100,000 to throw up a post on Instagram. So it's back to that kind of, the jig is up. We get that you're all just people trying to make money. I do kind of empathize, or, you know, I get how hard that must be. But I think the rough answer to the question is that when it feels like it is inching into icky territory that might be damaging to people that don't know any better, that means you've sold out.
Well, there's, like, the last thing I'll bring up, and we can end this segment, is sort of that the like, deposits versus withdrawals model of how you think about your image or your value system or whatever. And like, ultimately, you're building up an image and trust with people over time by creating whatever it is that you create. And, like, if you take one withdrawal, right, like, Chance had built up a lot of equity over time and he did a Doritos commercial and got his check, and great. Like, took a quick withdrawal, like made his money, he can keep making music and people will love him and all of that. Fantastic. If he's just like, he did the Doritos commercial this week and he's doing like Twinkies mm-hmm. commercials next week and, mm-hmm. and whatever, I think that is like a balance as well of like, you did it once and like, that's fine. Like everyone can understand, like make your money. But if you're sort of just like constantly selling to everyone, like that deposits and withdrawals of trust, I think you can erode over time. You can go bankrupt on trust. So
totes. Doritos, fine. Doritos plus Twinkies, borderline.
Too far. Critical Nonsense is a Sylvain Labs production.
Recorded in MacGyver Studios in New York, New York.
We'd like to thank special guest host Alana Bondell, who has now changed her name to Miss Alana. And of course, executive producer and TMI champion, Jess Vander.
We'd also like to thank our sound engineer, Alex Contel.
Designer Nora Mestrich for, you know, throwing shade up in Elias.
And with production help from our super team, Sarah Gilbert, Les Jacobs, and Tony Wong.
And as always, thanks, Alan.
Thanks.
And of course, our special thanks. I'd like to thank Cool Ranch Doritos for being addictive.
Personal opinion. I'd like to thank Cisco for facilitating workplace collaboration.
I was really hoping that it was going to be like some, they made like a product that had like floss in the name and that it was just Millie Bobby Brown doing like the backpack kid floss dance, because that's the only thing I really know of her outside of
Cisco.
Yeah, no, I didn't know what the connection was. I couldn't figure it out. I would like to thank Oversharers Everywhere.
Yeah. I'd also like to thank my flat tummy.
I'd like to thank Alana's diarrhea-lined pockets.
See? And this is... Yep.
How much I is TMI.
On the podcast.
I'd like to thank Jess Vander for her reactions that you don't get to see every time I say something stupid.
Every day.
Every day.
We have a great relationship.
Not on the pod, on the pod, everywhere.
Wherever.
You know, if I'd like to thank you for sharing this episode with your friends after the pocket lining comments.
And I'd also like to thank MailChimp.
MailChimp? MailChimp?
MailChimp.
And we'd like to thank Lana's fiance, Adam, for making it all the way to this point.
Use code Subway for $10 off.
Thank you. Bye.
How's the, is everyone close enough to their microphone? Yes. Okay.
You just interrupted my intro.
Oh, was that your intro? I'm sorry.